Hi, and welcome to another episode of Nursing Your Way to Wealth, where a mental health nurse and an accountant talk about wealth creation, personal development, and financial independence in the UK to help you live the life you deserve.
So our topic for today is housing, accommodation or shelter, and we're going to talk about whether we feel it's better to rent or to buy, pitfalls of each, benefits of each, and really just have a bit of a conversation around the way the market is currently. So which is, we're recording this in January 2024, and we're going to look at our own experiences as well, because Alex and I both have experience of both renting and buying houses. So we'll add that a bit into the mix as well. We'll talk a little bit of emotions and psychology as well, and we'll think about really what we can do to help give people a better understanding between renting and buying houses.
Yeah, and hi everyone. And I think probably as a good starter for the episode, I can just talk through maybe my experience with houses. And yeah, Alex, it'd be great to hear yours, and then we can have a chat about the good and the bad. So I've been living in and around London for the last about 13 years. I've started off renting spare rooms in houses, which was good fun, and you meet quite a lot of people. I then went to move and rented a flat, a kind of a self-contained flat. And probably when I was 27, so about 8 years ago, I bought my first flat, not in London, but actually up in York, and it's something I rented out as a bit of an investment property. And then for the last 4.5 years, I've been living in a mortgaged house just outside London. So I've gone through I also then sold my flat, I should say, before that. So I've gone through the stress of buying and selling, and also seen some of the positives. So for me, the main thing I like from owning a house is the kind of the forced saving mechanism. So that you're putting money away every month, and for an amount which is probably equivalent to, if not slightly lower than rental. Your mortgage payment is, you're paying down principal, you're buying a little bit more of your house every month. And I like that feeling that I'm kind of making financial progress whilst enjoying and living in a house. So for me, that's the main reason I see it from quite a financial standpoint of, would I prefer to be buying and owning my house over time rather than paying somebody else's mortgage for them? I don't know what your experience is like, Alex, and if you've got similar feelings for rental versus buying.
Well, I think things like this can be a double-edged sword, and it depends on really your viewpoint of where you're looking at it from, the lens you're looking at it from, your past experiences, and really whether you aspire to own a house. I mean, for some reason in the UK, we have this obsession with buying and owning property, and it's seen as a bit of a rite of passage, and it's almost, we're a little bit of an anomaly, the UK population, because a lot of European countries don't ever buy houses. They just rent them for life. I'm thinking like Germany here, so others there as well. So I think it's something that, for some reason, I think Brits or UK people get a lot of perhaps stability from buying a house. People feel like they've made it in life if they've bought a house, and then you have this, as your family expands perhaps, you need more space, you want more space, you earn more money, you feel like you should have a different kind of house, so you pack all your things, move wherever you're going to move to. But I feel like one of the best bits about owning a house is it's yours, and nobody can come and take it away from you apart from the bank, unless if you don't pay your mortgage. But at the same time, it's a real hassle and effort to up sticks and relocate, and it takes months and months, and there's significant costs involved. Whereas if you're renting and you decide, actually, I want to move from outside London to Wales or Scotland or Cornwall or whatever, you can just give your landlord whatever notice you need, pack all your things and go. You don't have conveyancing, surveys, the hassle of estate agents, etc., packing all your stuff and moving your life somewhere else. It's really an uprooting thing. So I would really think that, I mean, I've moved house a couple of times in my life and each time it's been really stressful. So I would want to simplify that as much as I can. And there's an argument there for renting that it would give you that flexibility as opposed to buying a house. But then, as you say, Alex, buying a house is a bit of a forced saving aspect because every month you're paying some of your mortgage, you pay some of the capital and a bit of interest, and you buy, I like to imagine I'm buying bricks of my house every month, which keeps me motivated to continue working. And then there's that money stacks, you can then and then sell your property. But I think it comes as really as part of your life plan. Where do you want to live? If you're going to live somewhere for a long time and you're absolutely sure of that, then I would say, yeah, work towards buying a house. If you want to be a bit more free and move around regularly in and out the country, up and down the country or what have you, there's an argument there for renting. And I think certain people find themselves drawn to one or the other. Obviously, you have to have the financial means. And within the last, I'll say, 20 years or so, the property prices in England have gone a bit mental. And that coming from me is quite a thing. So I think it's something that certainly a lot of people aspire to. I mean, Alex, is it something that when you were kind of growing up, teenager kind of area before you moved to uni, did you have your sights set on I must own a house at all costs, or is it something you've made a decision on later?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And so we're similar ages, and I imagine our parents have gone through the same kind of baby boom kind of benefits with having property. So my parents have moved several times, each time having a kind of bigger house, doing better financially. And I think certainly for that generation, that the property price, like average returns were ginormous compared to like the historical average. So I was in an environment growing up where it was almost a no-brainer that you should be buying a house. I think what is proving a lot more difficult for kind of our generation is that, as you just mentioned, the property prices are just insane in some places. And from what was an average of, say, like, I think three times the average salary was a house price back in the kind of 70s and 80s to easily being 7, 8, 9 times the average wage somewhere, it's proven so much more difficult. I think for me personally, I'd always wanted to buy, but I wouldn't say I was ever in a huge rush. I think what was important for me is I didn't want all of my net worth tied up in a house. And so I was quite careful of not overstretching myself financially to buy a house or flat, to buy a property. And I think sometimes there's a risk of people absolutely maxing out to try and buy the most house that you can. But then what you end up with is a lot of your money is then just tied up in one place. And that was something I was really conscious of not wanting to do. Yeah, I don't know what your thoughts are, if you had a similar thing.
I did. I mean, you can be very asset or house rich and cash poor, which means you're technically worth an awful lot on paper because you own a building in a particularly, well, I don't know, salubrious area of the country, or an area that where prices have gone a bit crazy. But you need the cash flow to then maintain that as well. We are similar ages. I imagine our parents are probably within a decade of each other as well. And differently to you, my mum and dad lived in the same house for virtually my entire childhood. They moved to what was my childhood house when I was certainly less than 6 months old. And they didn't, I think my mum and dad, they sold it when I was 28 or something like that, something a bit like kind of a long, long time. So didn't have any uprooting, moving houses, moving schools, anything like that. It was very, very stable, actually. I probably haven't thanked them enough for that stability, but I didn't see the buy one house, chop it in for another one, use some equity, buy a next house, etc. It was very much just one house. And then you just live in it for a long, long time. And I think that's impacted my thinking, because where I live now with my wife, I would like, if we can, I'd like to move house and only do it once. So I'm very much into just buying our what I would consider to be our forever home. Doesn't need to be any bigger, I don't think, than the space we have now, but I would just like a bigger garden and some extra outdoor space really is the main factor, especially living in the southeast. And you're right, I think a lot of people do, they graduate from university or whatever, they do some kind of apprenticeship and get their first job and they earn, say, 25,000, 30,000, 40,000, whatever it may be, if they're lucky. They then usually find a partner because buying with two incomes is easier than one. And sometimes, in fact, a lot of the time, it's a necessity. As you said, the house price is many, many multiples of annual salaries at the moment. And then they'll visit the bank and they'll get a mortgage in principle of whatever. And the bank will, I don't know if this is right, but encourage you to spend up to your limit because they'll make more money that way. And I've seen an awful lot of nurses buy houses when interest rates were less than 2%, and they're working lots of overtime, and they can just about stretch to it. And I really worried a bit for them when the rates climbed and what that would mean for them. So I think if anyone is thinking about buying a house, really think about what space you need versus what space you want. There's no point in having the fanciest house ever and having to work 12 hours a day, 7 days a week to afford it. You'll never spend any time in it unless you work from home, and then it will seem like a bit of a trap. But I think for me, thinking about what I can control in that, I can control where we live, where we work, how much we spend on it. And a lot of people, I think, buy too much house and they end up then working monumentally hard, which we know is not good for physical or mental health, and they work that hard for a really long time, and then it does have its impact. I mean, there's a fantastic book, just a bit more about health on a tangent, called The Body Keeps the Score, and I can't remember the name of the author. It's Van der Bessel, I think, and it basically says that your body keeps the score on all the stress, physical and mental work that you go through. So that's something I've read it recently, so I'm really mindful of that before I sign myself up to a 20 or 30 year mortgage at a ridiculous rate, meaning I'll have to work all hours of every day.
That's a great title for the book, actually. I like that sentiment. I think I might have to give that a read. And yeah, it's for me, that's a really important thing with houses. It's just making sure that you don't overstretch. And so for me, I have like some rules kind of or guardrails for myself. So I don't really want my housing costs to be any more than 30, 35% of my kind of take home pay. I really don't want to be trapped. And I think that's something where it's that feeling where, you know, you want to live in your house and enjoy it, but you don't want your house to own you and be dictating things. So, and one of my goals over the next kind of 5 to 10 years, I want to clear my mortgage because I can't stand having it. It's a very useful tool as a way of buying a property, but I don't like I find them very trapping. And I was just going to say as well, just on the topic of on renting, for me, I think renting can be super useful if you're really not sure about where you want to be putting down roots. I think renting is just such a brilliant way of trying out new neighborhoods and even renting on a short-term thing. So if you were looking to buy a house, you know, spend hundreds of thousands of pounds on a house, and you're looking at a couple of different neighborhoods perhaps that you're maybe not too familiar with, you don't necessarily have to go and rent in the traditional way of getting a landlord, but you could maybe get a, you know, something off on Airbnb for a month or kind of short-term lets, just to really do your, you know, do the work commutes, see what it's really like at weekends, and kind of absorb yourself. Because then, even though that might be an upfront cost, if you think you're then doing the real due diligence on buying a house, if that's your plan, you're then knowing that you've got as much information as possible to buy a house, and you know exactly what that area is like before you commit and spend, you know, not just, you know, tens of thousands on deposits and things, but also the same again on estate agent fees and stamp duties. It's very expensive. And if you get a house and you get it wrong, it's a very expensive mistake to try and move back. To say if you were to buy a house in the middle of nowhere and suddenly realize your commute it is, you know, twice as long as you even thought it was going to be, and actually the people aren't very friendly or there's really nothing going on, you know, you could have saved yourself a whole lot of trouble and money by leveraging rent. So yeah, that's my 2 cents on rent. But my personal preference is always to try and buy a house. But yeah, that's kind of my thoughts on that.
Is the housing, the preference for a house, is it a stability thing? I mean, I know everything's biased towards negative news, and landlords often get a bad rap, sometimes rightly so, but sometimes they get tarred with the same brush as one bad one. But are you thinking similar to me that having a house is a bit more stable, so long as you can continue, obviously, with upkeep, maintenance, paying the bills, etc.? No one's can phone you up and say, actually, you've got 3 months, 6 months, a year, whatever, to move and sell up. So if you own the house, you're not going to phone yourself, are you, and tell you need to move out. You're going to make that conscious choice to move. And like you, again, I do this thing sometimes where I look at houses. I start off reasonable, and then I end up looking at a £5 million mansion somewhere. And I scrolled down to a stamp duty calculator, and actually, some of the amounts are eye-watering. They're like five figures worth of stamp duty, which I certainly hadn't thought about too much before.
Yes, I know what you mean. I'm also guilty of looking at I think they call it house porn when you do that, and you look at these ridiculous things. But yeah, that I've looked at, you know, you look at the 2-3 million pound houses, and yeah, the stamp duties are, I think that easily, you know, a deposit for probably several houses, and that's purely the tax going straight to the government. So another reason not to overbuy or be very mindful of the the cost of actually purchasing a house. But yes, but sorry, to your earlier point just on stability, I think there is a lot about that stability and security that offering. If you own, then you know that you're in that, it's my decision to, you know, assuming that you're meant to keep up with your bills. Yeah, I'm in this now as long as I want to be. And so there is something quite, yeah, it must be some deep-rooted psychological reason for that. But I like that idea that it's mine and nobody else can have it. Yeah. Do you have the same feeling and with your house?
I think that depends on the day of the week, really. Sometimes, often in the spring or summer, and like some of the flowers in our garden they look nice, and the sun's out, and people feel better. And other time, and that time, I'm like, well, this is great. I mean, we've worked really hard, and we've had this, etc. And then other times, when your roof leaks, or your windows are letting loads of drafty air in, or you need to replace, I don't know, flooring or something, or you make a mark on the wall and it needs painting, etc. That's then up to you in the occupants of the house to resolve. And I know there are obviously house insurances and other insurances to protect things like that, but you're very much on the hook for those things. It's not just a phone call or process with a letting agent or whatever to get these things fixed. It's if you can't afford to fix it, you then have to go without whatever it may be. I mean, I know when my wife and I, we first kind of moved in, she had the house before me, and then I moved in a bit later, that our windows here were awful, and they were letting in so much cold air. We were burning so much heating through heating bills to try and keep the place warm, and most of that heat was just going out of the house through the windows, and we were cold for a long time. And then we saved really hard. We did Airbnb for a couple of years to put away money to buy new double glazed windows, and the difference that has made is unbelievable. And yes, it's very easy for me to say, look, just buy double glazing, and it was, I think, many thousands of pounds. I think 5,000 for 10 windows in 2018. But that doesn't come without sacrifice. We rented our rooms for probably 2 years, and we had numerous people staying here with us at all types of time of the year, and it really disrupts a bit of your life. But we figured it would be worth doing. Now I can think back on it and think, actually, it's worth doing. Our house is much warmer. But then I've not remembered all the cleaning and the laundry and the meeting and greeting people at 11 p.m. because they got off the bus or the train too late. And there was a huge element of sacrifice there. So it's something I think I look back on with rose-tinted glasses. I'm also very aware that we're very fortunate to own a house, incredibly fortunate, because I've rented a flat on my own for a bit before I met my wife, and it was a very different landscape to where we're at now. And I think if you are renting and you're stuck in this renting cycle and most of your money's going out of the door on rent, and you can't afford to save for a house deposit without some sort of miracle, you can be your own miracle. I ended up doubling my salary by training into nursing. I was again fortunate that the course at the time I did it was, I got a bursary from the government and I didn't have any student loans from it. But those are all still available for a lot of health things. But use the time that you have, instead of lamenting the situation, use it and see how you can turn it into a positive. What can you do to increase your income? And with the advent of the internet, you can learn pretty much anything at any point in time. You can take any sort of online course. I mean, Alex, is accountancy something you can do at Open University, or is it certainly something you have to turn up to a uni and do?
Yeah, so with accounting, you can do I think they do offer the courses through, I don't know about the Open University, but there's certainly accountancy training. So there's a couple of kind of feeder courses, which you might see something called the AAT, or I think it's the Association of Accounting Technicians. That's kind of an entry level into like the chartered accountancy. So certainly like that AAT you can do in your spare time through Open University and other colleges. If you then, and that is good at, you know, as a recognized qualification, it is then a feeder into chartered accountancy. And then you would then need to ideally have an employer sponsor you to do any chartered accounting qualifications. And the reason for that is it takes 3 years, and it's a combination of exams and experience. So you have to kind of sign off, you have to get people signing off logbooks and making sure that you've done the work that, you know, an accountant is expected to do. But it's certainly that kind of entry into it is something that can be done in your spare time. And I think similarly for law as well, there's kind of law conversion courses which you can do. The tricky bit, as probably all of the kind of professional qualifications, it's like once you have it, it's being able to get to find employers and to be able to sponsor you to give you the experience in order for you to qualify. So it's a bit of a chicken and egg situation when it comes to that. But I really like your sentiment earlier, just on like not lamenting the situation with buying houses. You know, I think unfortunately the situation isn't going to change. Certainly in the long term, it's still going to be stupendously expensive to buy property. But I guess there's a couple of ways that you can try and get something slightly cheaper. And one way is trying to find something that needs quite a bit of DIY doing to it. So you probably don't want to find houses that need structural work if their walls are wonky or the roof's about to fall in. But certainly where it's cosmetic, so paint, which just needs a bit of TLC, you know, painting the walls, maybe installing new bathroom furniture and kitchens, things like that. You mean it is a lot of work, but it means that you can buy property that you may not otherwise be able to afford if it was to have been done up. So yeah, I like the idea of, you know, trying to boost your income, but also recognizing the situation and trying to, you know, maybe look at different ways of buying houses.
I think that's again a pertinent point. And I've just a quick fun thing. I've just looked up the Open University accountancy course, and there is one listed there that it's called BSc Honours in Accounting and Finance, and it's just my best guess at what you've studied. And it gives the full kind of costing out for it as well. So I would think an employer would be helpful as a sponsor, because as of today's date, it costs £20,772 total for the 3 years. But in one of the entry requirements, it says there are no formal entry requirements for the qualification. And then I quote, however, a basic understanding of mathematical operations such as addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division would be helpful. And that, I just find that very, very funny when you go into accountancy and that's something that you don't or can't have, which I would imagine all accountants should have that in their wheelhouse 100%, because in my naive understanding of accountancy is that's basically it.
That's it, yeah, and learn to use Excel. But if there's any listeners that are interested in looking at accountancy as a career, then I'm happy to have a chat or even do an episode on something. If you want to send any questions, I'm happy to field some of those and what it's like doing accountancy, like professional qualifications. So yeah, offers open there.
Sure, and I didn't hear all of that, but what I've understood is the gist is if anyone wants to learn a bit more about entry to accountancy, you'd happily field some questions, and perhaps we can do an episode on it, entry to accounting, and I'll do the same, but entry into nursing, not just specifically mental health, but it can include adult nursing, radiography, occupational therapy, or paediatrics, peds nursing, or something like that. So it's something that certainly has changed the trajectory of my life, and Alex, hopefully certainly yours as well, because it means you're part of a specialized field, so there's less people going for jobs that you apply for, so automatically your chances of getting a job are better. Thinking about the general nursing field demographic as it is at the moment, people are crying out for nurses, so finding work is not difficult. I mean, there used to be a time when I didn't have a job and a full-time one, and I just worked agency shifts, and I would just plan them day by day, and I could fill a week worth of shifts on a Sunday evening. So that's sadly not the case anymore, and some of the salaries have come down, but they're still there if you look hard enough and you are prepared to work in places where most people don't wish to. So yeah, I think Alex, that would be a valuable thing actually, because we can talk about how we made those decisions, how we arrived at that, and actually whether you or I regret those decisions, because I mean, I don't think I do right now, but you only know the one side of the story. It's like picking houses. If you've got two close options, you pick house A over house B, and house A turns out to be brilliant or a nightmare, you're always going to wonder, well, what if I picked house B? But again, you never know. They both could be brilliant. They both could be nightmares. Who knows? And just back on your point of perhaps buy a house to do up. I mean, our house has a particular name, which is reference to its state when we bought it. And it was really, it needed so much work. And we're talking structural repairs here, we're talking floors, bathrooms, walls, all sorts of stuff. It definitely wasn't habitable without an awful lot of work in the beginning. And I think between my wife and her family, when they bought the house, they did, I think, 22 tip runs before that they could even see some of the floors. So it's a bit of a labor of love, and it's a monumental task for sure. So my guidance there would be, if you're going to buy a house, have as many surveys, like structural surveys, as you can, to actually understand what you're buying. That's why that's an industry in itself.
Yeah, wow, that's impressive. And I'd agree. I was just about to jump in and like make sure get the surveys done. And it's really the structural stuff, which I think you need to have a network of people that you can pull on to help you with that. So if you've got friends or relatives or no trusted builders or plumbers, then they really are a huge asset, because having somebody that you can trust, especially when they're dealing with, you know, quite serious house problems. I know certainly for my case, and me and my partner, we bought a house that it looked, luckily we didn't have structural problems, but it just hadn't been, it had been lived in by a family for about a decade and a half, and just nothing had ever been done to it. No painting, no decorating, nothing. So it was just very tired, and it was quite a nice blend of, and because it was the first time we'd bought something, we had no furniture. So we lived on a blow up bed in the living room whilst we decorated all of the house, and we had to change a couple of bathrooms, but it was very manageable. It was quite good fun looking back at it, actually. But luckily we had no need for kind of supporting beams being added or anything like that. So it was, and as a result, the cost, we could keep the cost under control. I think when you start looking at structural work and you're buying the house, that's something, where it's you almost don't know what you don't know until they rip the side of your house off as trying to make it more supportive. But no, for us, that's been quite rewarding, and we, no way would we have been able to afford the house that we have if it had been done up. So just another example of maybe trying to look at something, slightly needing a bit of care and attention in order to get that first foot on the property ladder.
Definitely. And I think about, there's a thing here about realism and being realistic with what you can afford, especially with the days now of social media, and everything looks perfect and everyone's got massive houses, etc., when the majority of people actually don't, and they live a normal, regular day-to-day life. I think I might have misquoted when I said structural. It wasn't kind of bricks or walls or subsidence. We did some internal walls, making new and repairing, and we had some quite severe ceiling issues, so we had to take one ceiling down and repair some kind of joists and stuff. And fortunately, I'm a member of our family is a carpenter, so that was really, really helpful. But yeah, at one point we could see from our ground floor all the way through to the roof, so it was a lot. But I'm glad we did it. I don't have hugely fond memories of it, unlike you, but I'd much prefer to live in something that's done well the first time. So I'm not for cheaping out on things. I would much rather pay properly to have something done and dusted, and I don't have to think about it for 10 years, rather than do something a bit more cheaply and quickly, or perhaps have me do it instead of a tradesperson, and then I have to redo it in a year, 2 years time, and we're back to the boots theory of buy once, cry once. So I think that's, again, something to think about. We're straying a bit off the rent versus buy thing. We're in a kind of house maintenance hybrid type episode. Is there anything else in the rent versus buy sphere that you had noted down that you want to mention?
I was just going to mention one thing just around renting, and it's probably an episode in itself, actually, where if you could almost live in a different part of the world and say rent a property. I mean, I use extreme examples here, but say if you could rent somewhere in Thailand but work remotely and still have a kind of a salary level equivalent to something that you get in Europe or the US, I've seen that being done to quite great effect. So if you become a bit of a digital nomad in a way, and then go and rent somewhere. We had one of our lodgers, we rent out one of our rooms, he was a golf coach, and he could work from anywhere as long as he could have his golf clubs with him and a computer screen. He would do coaching online, and he went traveling, I think, across Asia, and so he would be renting places and then doing his golf work from there. So I thought it was quite an inspiring way to look at something, but that could be a fairly extreme example, but something where, you know, if you can use like geo arbitrage to and use rent, then you're not tied to one place in particular, that you can access some opportunities like that from a way of trying to maximize your income and your net income. But yeah, that was kind of where the only other thing I had down on my notepad. How about you, Alex? Was there anything else from you?
No, not from me. And that's just an interesting image, actually, to see someone carrying a bag full of golf clubs across like Asia, Southern Asia. I don't know if they play golf out there. I have no idea. But I just find the image of someone sitting on a bus or a train next to a bag of golf clubs quite funny. And I just really highlights what can be done with certain situations. And a lot of people feel like they can't do things because whatever number of reasons get in the way. And what I think both of us, and jump in if you think I'm wrong here, but what I would suggest people do with that is that they test these things. You can try staying somewhere in an Airbnb and try a new business from there. You can, like you say, you can take your golf clubs with you to Asia, and you can have some form of online coaching from that. There'll be something in this world that you're good enough at that people will pay you for. And it's really having a bit of that self-confidence, perhaps needing a bit of a push in the right direction. So if you are thinking of something that you have always wanted to do, or something that you think might have some business legs to grow, have permission from us to do it. Try it. See how it goes. Don't be afraid to take the first step in. I mean, you'll either get it right or you'll learn. There is no lose in this situation. So have a think about these things. Garner a bit of confidence, take a bit from us, and just really try. You never know, it could end up ultimately changing your life. And I've made some questionable decisions in my life. I mean, one of my decisions I've made was to flip a coin whether to go to university or not, and then pull some courses in universities out of a hat. And here I am, I'm in a happy place right now, which is great. And I have more things than I ever thought I would. I mean, not material things, but I have, I live here with my wife and a dog, and we had some chickens until recently. So those were all good things based off what I thought was chance. But what the chance game did at that point is give me the confidence to do it. So if you have an idea like that, please do something with it. You owe it to yourself to at least try. Yeah, that's it. I don't have anything else. Is there anything last up you want to say?
No, I think that was a excellent summary. I'm inspired.
I'm also very much not advocating flipping coins on major decisions in your life. If they need properly thinking about, please properly think about them. Don't be flipping coins whether to hitchhike to Southern Asia or whatever. Okay, I think we've covered it and more. Thank you for listening. If you have any questions or anything like that, you can email us. It's nursingyourwaytowealth@gmail.com. We'll put some show notes below just around our thoughts as a reminder, and our email address will be there as well. And I think until next time. None of what we discuss on the show is to be considered financial or health advice, and we recommend you always do your own research or consult an independent financial advisor or a doctor when making your financial or health decisions.